And it was justified by an allegorical reference to scriptures. But now let me jump ahead again. We've gone through the Council of Nicaea. 56 years later, they had to reaffirm the decisions of the Council of Nicaea. That was 381. 50 years later, the General Council of Ephesus. Again, I just want to demonstrate preachers been fighting over territories all through the history of the church. And it survives. God always has somebody that can separate the message from the men. One of the minor activities of the General Council of 381, that's the one at Constantinople, was to provide a new bishop for the see it thought worthy of the second place in the church. And you remember, because Constantinople was decreed the new Rome, therefore it was elevated to a patriarchate importance second only to Rome, even though it had no apostolic foundation and was not one of the early formed churches. Because Constantinople, making it his new capital, and moving the capital of the combined Roman Empire there, there was a aura effect extended. Since the first Rome was considered to be primary in importance, Constantinople, as the second Rome, was elevated above Antioch, Alexandria, Jerusalem, Caesarea, to the second most important see. And they appointed a new bishop, thought worthy of the second place in the church, in the place of Gregory of Nazianzus, who had been forced out. The bishops chose an old retired veteran of the high places of imperial administration, Jerry Falwell. Nectarius. I could probably do something with that. He ruled for 16 years and gave general satisfaction. And it is recorded that in his quiet and peaceful way, no, it wasn't Jerry, this practiced administrator began to turn the new primacy of honor into something very much like a primacy of fact. It gradually became the fashion to send appeals of various kinds to Constantinople, and for the bishop there to deal with them as though to do so were part of his jurisdiction. When Nectarius died in 397, the question who should succeed him then was something to interest the whole East, not because of any generation of theological leadership. It was the bishopric in the new capital. And the church had become the official religion. It was the position of power. What TV evangelist of that day would not want to be president? Constantinople was CBN, PTL, and Lynchburg combined. Virginia Beach, Lynchburg, and Fort Mill in one place. Of course, poor old Schuller was clear off out here in Alexandria. Jimmy Swaggart was down in Antioch. The personage who moved immediately was the Bishop of Alexandria, Theophilus. He had a candidate, one of his own priests. One of his chief confidants, in fact. Shula's too far away to be Alexander. He's got to be at Rome. He got the robes to go with it. He had a candidate, Theophilus of Alexandria did, one of his own priests, one of his chief confidants, in fact. But the court had a candidate also. The court being no longer the emperor who had called the council in 381. The emperor who had called the council in 381, remember, was a descendant of Constantine who was anti-Arian. Theodosius the emperor who had called the council in 381 had died January 17th, 395. He was the last man to rule the whole Roman world as sole emperor. And the minister Eutropius, who governed in the name of Theodosius' youthful successor Arcadius, was in control of the court. So not the bishop of Alexandria, but the minister Eutropius, who governed in the name of Theodosius' youthful successor Arcadius, had its way and brought from Antioch an aesthetic personage, the monk John, famed as the great preacher of the day, known to later ages thereby as Chrysostom, the man with the tongue of gold. He was consecrated by Theophilus in February 398. But Theophilus went home bitter, it is thought. Alexandria had failed to place its man in 397 as it had failed on the like occasion in 381 in the time of its late bishop Timothy. And it was only the threats of Eutropius that there were some serious charges on file against Theophilus that had brought that bishop to accept the appointment of the monk from Antioch. Eutropius flew out to Palm Springs, and he told Theophilus that there were some serious charges on file against him. Otherwise, Theophilus never would have accepted the appointment of John. But with the threat of exposure, he accepted the appointment of the monk from Antioch. Things really change, don't they? A few words about the actual power of the Bishop of Alexandria will revive some of the faded color of the tragic history that is to follow. He was, first of all, more absolutely Lord in all matters of daily life of the bishops dependent upon him than was at that time any other bishop in the church. And of these dependent bishops, there were something like 100. He chose them all. He personally consecrated them, the metropolitans no less than their suffragans. He was also, whether himself a monk or not, a kind of supreme patriarch of the monks in this country of Egypt where the monastic life had begun, and he thereby enjoyed unique prestige in the whole monastic world. He was immensely wealthy, with revenues coming from such extraordinary sources as his seized monopoly of the right to sell salt and nitrates and papyrus and all the various lugubrious paraphernalia needed in funerals. He had an absolute heritage USA there in Alexandria. Alexandria, until Constantinople rose to the fullness of its promise, was the wonder city of the whole Roman world. The greatest of all trade centers, the queen of the Mediterranean. But I'll say this. You sure can't accuse these guys of thinking in their origins at least, as small as Jerry the Fat and Jimmy the Swagger and Jerk and Jimmy the Little. I mean, they really pick cities with big destinies. Lynchburg, Baton Rouge. And I'm not putting those cities down. There are cities that attract people for various reasons, but they're not cities likely to become the financial centers of the world or the commercial centers of the world. Fort Mill, and the man who would be president, Virginia Beach. No, you don't really don't use those cities normally in the same breath as London and Rome and New York and Los Angeles. That's why I wanted this ministry to tackle the heart of the city, destined to be number one in the world. And to you that are interested, the eschatological parousia will not occur this week. I'll have a comment about the imminence of the eschatological parousia next Monday or Tuesday. So Alexandria, until Constantinople rose to the fullness of its promise, was the wonder city of the whole Roman world, the greatest of all trade centers, the queen of the south. And of nothing was the great city prouder than of its sea. Not S-E-A, S-E-E. The seat of its bishop. The bishop of Alexandria moved. In an habitual popularity and power that made of him a kind of native king, with mobs willing to demonstrate in his favor at a moment's notice. For 45 years, the sea had had in Athanasius a saint for its bishop, a saint whose endless contests with the never much loved imperial government, whose many exiles and inflexible fidelity to Nicaea had achieved for his successors a position the like of which has probably never been known. This in the hands of a saint. But Theophilus was far from being a saint. The saint now was at Constantinople. And in the world of Theophilus' kind, he was soon to be hopelessly lost. These considerations, the space given to them, rather, into the story of St. John Chrysostom, is a study of the councils of Ephesus and Chalcedon, and is due to the simple fact that rivalry between the two seas, Alexandria and Constantinople, ceaseless after 381, mattered very greatly in the history of these councils. That Alexandria sought endlessly to control Constantinople, that at Ephesus in 431 and again in 449, a bishop of Alexandria was the very willing agent of the deposition and excommunication of a bishop of Constantinople, and that at Chalcedon in 451, the all but impossible happened, when a bishop of Alexandria was deposed and excommunicated, and Alexandria, civic, popular Alexandria, no less than the clerical world and the monks, never forgot this and never forgave it, and it being the 5th century and not the 20th, bull spit. the more human side of these grave ecclesiastical contentions ultimately brought down to ruin the wealthiest province of the empire. Things don't change much, do they? Chrysostom, as he is commonly called, the first effective bishop his see had known for many years, found abundance of employment for his zeal and inevitably made as many enemies as friends. Wealthy enemies, and highly placed, clergy among them, and even the young empress. The first occasion of his clash with the Bishop of Alexandria was the kind reception he gave to alleged victims of Theophilus' harsh rule. This was some 3 years after his appointment. On the heels of these fugitives, there came other monks sent by Theophilus with counter-accusations of heresy, but they failed to prove their case before the emperor and were themselves condemned. And the fugitives brought it about that Theophilus, Bishop of Alexandria, was summoned to answer their charges in person. He arrived in 403 with a cohort of 29 of his bishops in attendance, blaming Chrysostom for all that had happened, and swearing openly that he had come to the capital to depose John. And this is what his familiarity with the great world, his political skill, and his lavish expenditure actually achieved. John, when bidden by the emperor to summon a council for the trial of Theophilus, had refused. Alexandria lay outside his jurisdiction. He now, in turn, was bidden by the emperor to take his trial. Theophilus, his judge, with his 29 suffragans and a chance half dozen visiting bishops picked up in the capital. The group called the Senate of the Oak. From the counties, or from the country seat at Chalcedon, where these bishops met. John again refused to acknowledge an uncanonical jurisdiction, whereupon, for his refusal to appear to what he considered a bishopric group not having jurisdiction, he was condemned and deposed. The ultimate outcome of these proceedings was his exile to the furthest limits of the empire. And his treatment was so harsh that he died of it in 407. Theophilus celebrated his victory by composing a book against John, filled, it would seem, with all manner of hideous charges. And in John's place there ruled one of the priests of Constantinople, whom the saint John had had to censure. We wonder why this thing just keeps going on and on. Well, look how long this one's going on. I mean, we've already moved from 381 to 397 to 407, and we're not even to the council yet. These bare facts, which seemingly all writers accept, are sufficient witness to the existence of malevolence at Alexandria and to the corruption of life at the court of a Christian emperor. The other feature of this story is the action of the Pope, Saint Innocent the First. When the full account of these deeds reached him, letters from Theophilus, wholly misleading, from John, a full account down to the day he wrote, and the minutes of the Synod of the Oak were all sent to the Pope. This last the Pope refused to accept as a council at all. Its sentence on John was mere words. He took John to be still the lawful bishop of Constantinople. And when he was asked to recognize Atticus, put in John's place, he refused and broke off relations with both Alexandria and Antioch, who had recognized him. Theophilus was still out of communion from the standpoint of the Pope at Rome when he died in 412. His successor and nephew, Cyril, began his long career as bishop equally under the ban. He was bishop of a church that had been excommunicated by the Pope. Antioch was the first see to surrender and make the symbolic submission by restoring John's name to the diptychs, placing him in the list of deceased bishops officially prayed for. See, once John was deposed, even as a dead bishop, he was hopeless because they wouldn't pray for him. Now, Rome considered the actions against John to be wrong, so he cut off both Alexandria and Antioch, who recognized the puppet put in the place of John, Atticus. So Antioch and Alexandria are now cast out by Rome. Antioch is the first to give way, and they will make the symbolic submission by restoring John's name to the diptychs. The list of deceased bishops officially prayed for. I hope that Jerry Falwell never makes the diptych list. I agree with the Pope. It's pretty low to not even qualify for the diptych list. I'll bet you. Clint Eastwood adds, rejection from even being a diptych to the next speech he makes from somebody he tells off in one of his movies. I mean, that's a pretty eloquent that's an eloquent put down to remove somebody lower than the diptych list. You're not even worthy of being a diptych. Let's carry on with the preparation for the Council at Ephesus. Theophilus, the powerful successor to the saintly Athanasius, saintly in quotes, considered saintly because of his rigid defense of the Nicene Creed, failed to get his bishop in at Constantinople. And Theophilus was still out of communion when he died. Out of communion with Rome, that is, because Rome had opposed the later success of Theophilus, who got John deposed from Constantinople and put in Atticus. Alexandria and Antioch recognized Atticus, the successor to John, a puppet subordinate to the viewpoints of Alexandria and Antioch. So the Pope put him out of fellowship. Like the Assemblies of God. I heard the news say to Jim and Tammy Baker today as they returned to, was it Fort Mill or Fort Hill? Fort Mill. Well, you can't preach because the Assemblies of God took your license. Once again, it wasn't Jim who answered, it was Tammy. She was right. You don't need a license from the Assemblies of God to preach. I mean, if an Assembly of God license made a preacher out of Jimmy Swaggart, there you go. Theophilus was still out of communion when he died. Rome didn't like what he had done in regard to Constantinople and the successor to John. His successor, a nephew Cyril, began his long career as bishop equally under the ban. Antioch was the first see to surrender and make the symbolic submission by restoring John's name to the diptychs. Change a few letters. I've known a lot of those people. placing John on the list of deceased bishops officially prayed for. It'd be awful to be down there with nobody to officially pray for you. Then Atticus did the same, explaining fearfully to Alexandria that he really had no choice but to do this. Cyril, very young, as self-confident and absolute as was ever his uncle, stubbornly, even passionately refused. Quote, "You might as well ask to put Judas back in the company of the apostles," he wrote. Cyril had been with his uncle at the Oak, the so-called Synod of the Oak, which consisted of Theophilus and his 29 appointed bishops of his own see, and a chance half dozen visiting bishops picked up at the capital. They held what they called the Synod of the Oak at Chalcedon. And that's where they disfranchised and excommunicated John Chrysostom, Bishop of Constantinople. Banished him, he died in exile. Now, Cyril had been with his uncle at the Oak. About that time and that age, he would have been like Little Duck DeMoss. But in the end, Cyril, too, restored John's name to the diptych list. It was 15 years or so since these terrible scenes of episcopal vindictiveness. You know, reminds me of Jerry Falwell now that he's got Jimmy the Little properly telling the world he will only come back if Jerry invites him. Now Jerry's praying that they won't convict Jim of any criminal activity. He's suffered enough, like Richard Nixon. Boy, they pour it on. If my horses could eat what they put out, I wouldn't have to even sell any art to feed them. It was 15 years or so since these terrible scenes of episcopal vindictiveness until 1987. But the saint's body, John Chrysostom, had now been brought back with honor to his cathedral. I'll bet you anything you want to bet. If Jim Baker and Tammy Baker were to die in an auto accident or something, Jerry Falwell would conduct a national funeral on TV and entomb them with honors at Fort Mill. I might wrap them in all of Tammy's holes and mummify them, but she's one that the morticians wouldn't have to work on. Trying to chisel that stuff off.
For more of the teaching, please go to the next tape. Thank you.